Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
And hello, hello, hello. It is, of course, that time of the week. We talk all matters pertaining to health. And this week is not any different. The only different thing is it is not Charlie Naidu. This afternoon, I'm chatting to Tara Williams, who's a part of Wellbeing Africa's medical advisory panel. And she's a doula and lactation expert. So today we're talking about support for mothers and families before, during and after birth, exploring pregnancy, birth and postpartum support, what it is, why it matters and how it can change the experience for both parents and babies. So Tara, good afternoon and welcome to Radio Pulpit.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege to be here and to talk to you.
Lovely to have you with me. Now, Tara, let's start here, my lovey. For those who may not know, what exactly does a doula do? And maybe let's look at how is that different from a midwife or a nurse even?
So a doula is basically your emotional, physical support during your pregnancy, your birth, and your postpartum period. So a doula doesn't provide you with any medical expertise, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, your doula will be there supporting you emotionally, educating you about what is happening in terms of your pregnancy, in terms of what you can expect during your birth, what you can expect after birth. And then in the labor process, she's there to literally walk with you through that journey, never leaving your side. And it becomes your companion. So as opposed to the medical team who have all these responsibilities in terms of, for example, your midwife has to check all your vitals, check mm-hmm. that the baby's well, check that, you know, obviously delivering the physical delivery of the baby.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a midwife, you have a gynae, right, who does then similar things to that. However, with a doula, the doula is there for the mother and for the family in terms of typically almost like a Google in your pocket, right? So you have a doula in your pocket for your whole pregnancy, birth and postpartum.
Very interesting, I must say. Now, what are some of the biggest concerns or fears that expectant mothers share with you?
Most expectant mothers are always concerned with breastfeeding and how that is going to play out, you know, any fears, any stigmas, any myths that they've heard. And, you know, they really worry about that.
Mm.
And then, of course, the number one concern is always the birth. So, you know, if I have a vaginal birth, am I going to be able to handle the pain? Am I going to be able to go through this? Even if they do have that intention of a vaginal birth, they still are concerned about whether or not that they'll be okay through it.
Speaking of that, I always wondered to myself, Tara, where all these myths surrounding C-section births and vaginal births come from. And I don't know if you've ever heard that. I don't call it a conflict, but you know how they always say you're more of a woman if you've had a vaginal birth than a C-section. You know, all those stupid myths and arguments amongst women.
Absolutely, you know, and I always say, if you have a C-section, you actually didn't take the easy way out.
Yeah.
Because if you have to see the process of a C-section, or if you've been through it yourself, you would understand that this is major abdominal surgery, right? Mm. It's not just an easy feat. It's not something that just happens. It's major surgery. And with that, of course, it carries all of the surgical risks, right, that come together with that. So I think we always have to be aware of what we say, even as mothers ourselves, when we are talking to other mothers, being so aware of anything that can cause trauma and, you know, even trauma before they're birthing, because You know, negative stories get shared so often. People's opinion and perspective, like you say, of whether you are birthing in this way or that way. At the end of the day, we have to understand that it is the mother's choice. It is her choice how she births. And birth does matter, right?
Yeah.
The way women birth matter, in a sense that in a vaginal birth, there are so many benefits to the mother and the baby. However, C-section is there as a life-saving method of delivering the baby.
Yeah.
So, for example, you know, if you had a preterm baby or a baby who's in distress, or, you know, you are in a medical position where you are unable to give vaginal birth, mm-hmm. that C-section becomes life-saving. And that's why we honor it for what it is.
True.
But it should never be... You know, it should never be a stigma against what you choose.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, if you have all the information presented in front of you and you have now made this informed decision on which birth choice you want to do, it's still the best choice for you.
Wow. I love what you just said there. And I think it's comforting for C-section moms like us who had no choice as well. You know, instead of being made to feel guilty as if, hey, like you're saying, you chose the easy way out, definitely is not an easy way out. Now, tell me, Tara, what's one myth about childbirth that you wish more people understood?
Oh, gosh, let's talk about the big babies, right? Mm-hmm. That you can't birth big babies vaginally.
Yeah.
And that, you know, your shoe size is determined of how you birth your baby.
Or wow. Never heard of that one.
Ability to birth your baby. Oh, gosh. It's so, like, you know, it's so out there. And, you know, one thing, Luca, that I think people don't understand is when a woman is pregnant, right, and in her postpartum period, every single thing that you say becomes something that she really takes to heart.
Mm.
And she overthinks it 50 times over. You know, you've had,
yeah,
you know, you've had babies, and you know when someone says something, immediately it's something that you're now thinking about, right?
Mm.
It's something that is now playing on your mind for so long. And myths like these are so traumatizing to moms. So when you are having your scans and they see that your baby may be a little bit bigger, your body can accommodate for that,
yeah,
right? And yeah, women have been having vaginal births for centuries and they have birthed big babies. We have seen, you know, as doulas, we see 4.5 kg babies,
sure,
being born vaginally. And they are completely fine. Their moms are completely fine. And there's obviously a myriad of things that encompass the success of that birth happening,
mm,
right? So it's not to say just that, okay, you should have vaginal birth and you should push for it. Obviously, we're not saying in dangerous situations that you do that. But just to have a mother believe that this is possible for her,
mm,
you know? I myself, my first child was 3.3 kgs and he,
sure,
was birthed naturally. And if you look at me, I am one of the tiniest humans that you'll ever see. With a very little foot, right? A size, uh-huh, 3, size 4, uh-huh, foot. And, you know, none of that was ever brought up, you know, with my gynae as a barrier, you know, to birthing this big baby.
Yeah.
And when he was born, you know, everyone was surprised and said, oh my God, you know, you birthed such a big baby, such a small person. So it is definitely possible. With all other things considered, you could potentially birth a big baby with no problem. So if ever you do hear those feet stories or, you know, other myths that are, there's no evidence.
Yeah.
You know, there's no evidence to back it up. And that's what we should be questioning.
It really does embed a bit of paranoia in the parents, because I'm thinking my best friend had a baby about a year and a half or so before I had my twins. And we used to go to scans together, and she would always tell her gynae, no, this baby's head is too big. No, it has to be a C-section. And the gynae would always, he refused. I loved that about him, because she went for a natural birth, and that morning when she went to give birth, we thought, I mean, it was a regular morning, a day after she had gone to work. She woke me up and she said, I'm bleeding. I quickly rushed her to hospital. And there and then they were like, actually, you're not bleeding. You're in active labor. She gave birth that morning and life continued. She was okay. After I gave birth to the twins and she learned of how much pain I was in, she kept saying, oh, friend, I am so glad Dr. Sanga Bao refused to have me do a C-section, because yeah. I could have never endured.
So absolutely, you know, this conception that the baby's head is too large to birth is also something that we should question in terms of a myth, because our baby's heads are not fused together, you know, like ours is.
Oh.
And what happens is the bones actually cross over each other in order to come out of the birth canal. And that's just, I mean, in the amazing way that God has created us, is that the baby's head folds over, and that's why they get those cone-shaped heads. I don't know if you've seen babies that are born with a little bit of a cone-shaped head, but then as the days and weeks go by, that the head actually goes into its normal shape, you know, its normal circular shape. And that's the reason for it. So when people are always afraid of this big-headed baby, you know, like even your vagina, you know, your vagina stretches in order to fit your baby's head. And again, it's all dependent on a lot of factors and also how supported the mother feels, right? And this is where doulas play a big role in the birth, is that they are there. They are there to encourage the mother. They are there to move the mother in positions that makes it easier for her to birth. They keep her moving. They keep her motivated. And all of these are factors that work together for that successful birth. Because, of course, if you have the opposite and you have no support, no help, you've got all of these myths rolling around in your brain, you know, from pregnancy, it does become harder to successfully birth that baby with a big head or small head, you know?
Yeah. This one now, Tara, is a bit of a, it comes home. My next question to you really hits home, because it talks about breastfeeding. And, you know, like I said to you off air, this was quite a challenge for me. So what are the most common breastfeeding challenges that you see?
So definitely one of the most common breastfeeding challenges women experience is low milk supply, or what we sometimes call perceived low milk supply. Mm-hmm. And it can be whether your baby is exclusively, you know, premature and is you exclusively pumping. And there's obviously barriers and things to that that make low milk supply. Mm-hmm. Or it could even be a fact that you are directly feeding your baby, but you feel that the baby's not getting sufficient milk because the baby's crying maybe a little bit more often, or more often than you think is normal. And most often it's a perceived low milk supply and not true low milk supply.
Oh.
So low milk supply is definitely the main thing that all women have, I think, at some point in their lives felt that they didn't have enough milk for the baby. And that's what leads to what we call the formula trap. So when moms then supplement with formula, what then happens is they're directly impacting the amount of milk that they are going to make. So, for example, the more formula they are feeding to the baby, the lower their milk supply goes, because they are, of course, giving the baby the formula. The baby is full on the formula. And then they want to try breast again, and then they're not expressing effectively. And that then leads to low milk supply. So most often we see a lot of perceived low milk supply rather than true low milk supply.
Quite an interesting one, I must say, Tara, because like I said to you, there's a lot of things we tried. But I must say it was my first time hearing of the perceived low supply one. And I think, I don't know if I should call it a mummy paranoia, but I think we get there at some point in time, all of us. Now, tell me, Tara, can you share any practical tips for new mothers who are struggling with latching or even milk supply?
So practically, I would say reach out for free resources wherever you can find them. And on Wellbeings Africa, we are building these resources for everyone to use, where they can go, they can read through an article or find information on there, which can help them with, you know, just reading through the basics.
Yeah.
But secondly, I also want to say that sometimes when you read through documents or when you read through articles and information, it's sometimes very hard to apply it to your own life.
True.
Especially if, you know, you are Google searching. And I always call moms the biggest researchers, right? That you can find, because the minute they have a baby, they are researching everything and reading all of these Google websites and articles, and it's hard to sometimes apply it to your life.
Yeah.
So having a consult with a lactation specialist, and this can go anywhere from a breastfeeding counselor to a lactation consultant to a lactation specialist, you know, to someone, even your doula or your midwife that is maybe well-versed in lactation, who is then able to support you and kind of just join the dots for you with, okay, I can see you doing that. You know, there are places that provide free support for lactation, such as Lilesh League South Africa, 1,000 Days of Grace Foundation, which is my organization that I'm the CEO of. So all of these places provide free services to moms in terms of lactation.
All right. And speaking of support, Tara, how can partners and family members also support breastfeeding mothers better?
So for partners and family members, my recommendation is always to take care of the mother. The mom takes care of the baby, and the mom needs someone to take care of her. So from bringing meals to the mom, if the mom doesn't have someone who's cleaning the house or taking care of her other kids, that's what partners and families are there to do, not to feed the baby. You are not helping the mom if you are wanting to give the baby a bottle of formula to let the mom sleep for longer, because then you're impacting her milk supply, you're impacting the baby, because now the baby has increased chances of being sick or from having gassiness or constipation, you know, and all those things that formula brings. But, you know, you're not inherently helping the mother by doing that. So when you are helping, you help by burping baby. You know, mom feeds, dad burps. You help mom by, you know, giving her massage or getting her massage, cooking food for her, making sure she eats and drinks the whole day, making sure she snacks. I don't know if you recall, but when you're breastfeeding, you are hungrier than you ever were.
True.
In your pregnancy. So you feel all of a sudden like, oh my gosh, I'm always hungry, I'm always thirsty. So when you are breastfeeding, you need food, right? And you need snacks and you need nice things. And you've just given birth. So you also need to be taken care of. So that is where family can support and partners can support in terms of postpartum, not feeding the baby for the mom, because that's inherently going to create a domino effect of other problems. But when you take care of the mother and the mother takes care of the baby, that inherently creates a support system.
I love to hear that. Now, we often hear about the baby blues and postpartum depression. How can doulas and lactation specialists help moms cope in those early weeks?
So as much as doulas and lactation specialists are not necessarily qualified, unless they've done other courses that support maternal mental health, they wouldn't be the sole person that you go to for, say, for example, your postpartum depression, right? But for your baby blues, that could definitely be something that your doula or your lactation specialist can assist you with, because what they provide you with is emotional support. They walk you through it. And often when other providers are seeing you for a very short period of time, your doula and your lactation specialist will see you for a longer period. So you're talking about anything from an hour to an hour and a half to even 2 hours that you're spending with that person. And often, you know, for myself as a lactation specialist, I'm often the one saying, you know what, I think we should refer out to, you know, a psychologist or a counselor that is doing, you know, postpartum depression counseling, if we see that in the mom. And it's only because we spend so much time with the mom that we are able to pick that up. And, you know, you build trust. So I think the most important thing about the doula in the role of someone who's supporting for baby blues and postpartum depression is that you've built this relationship with the doula that literally spans from pregnancy all the way to postpartum. So when you get there, most likely the first person who you're going to trust enough to really pour your heart out and say, this is how I'm feeling, would inherently be your doula. And that's where the beauty comes in of the whole picture, is that they are then able to refer out.
Tell me, Berta, do medical aids generally cover doula costs, or are these perhaps like extra stuff?
So certain medical aids do, and, you know, not to mention a whole list of them, but I do know off the back of my head, Discovery, Momentum, I think Fed Health as well. You know, always check your maternity benefits and check if they do provide a doula, and then also check where they're paying it from, because I know a lot of medical aids are paying it from savings, and other medical aids have it as a benefit, you know, a separate maternity benefit. It may not be the full cost of the doula, but at least you get, you know, a portion of it back.
True. All right. I'm glad we've got that information, because it's something I never knew about in my time. So that's why I'm going to actually ask. So tell me, Tara, what signs should families look out for if a new mom is struggling emotionally?
So your normal baby blues would look like mom crying a lot, her feeling emotional, you know, a little bit overly sensitive. Those would kind of lead to the general baby blues, right? Because she's just given birth, she had this major shift in hormones, and it's almost normal for her to feel all of the things and to really be in her feels, you know, like people would say. So that's your normal part of it. Where she starts really disassociating with herself, not wanting to hold her baby, not wanting to cuddle her baby or, you know, do anything for the baby, that's when, you know, the warning signs are a little bit louder to say, you know, this may be a little bit more than that. So breastfeeding, when it is going well, can actually allow the oxytocin that happens through breastfeeding and the bonding experience with baby can help decrease the likelihood of postpartum depression. However, I want to say it with a disclaimer that if breastfeeding is not going well and it's not well supported, it can actually then increase the mom's chances of having postpartum depression. And on another note, I just want to mention that postpartum depression, as we know it, you know, inherently it's a buzzword that everybody speaks about, right? And I think in the last few years has been something more commonly heard of. But there are also a spectrum of postpartum and mood and anxiety disorders, which they call it. So, for example, postpartum anxiety is also something that we should be aware of. And, you know, as much as postpartum depression, as much as postpartum psychosis, as much as baby blues. So, you know, it's not a plain and simple answer that we're saying it's just postpartum depression, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at things, we look at a spectrum of potential mental health problems that a mom can have in her postpartum period. So, you know, just having awareness of all of that. So, for example, postpartum anxiety, you know, how anxious is the mom postpartum?
Mm-hmm.
How is she coping with the baby? Is she worrying about absolutely everything that she's doing and trying to do it five times over because she's so anxious, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, let's broaden also our perspective of postpartum depression and what to look out for in terms of the danger signs.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, when we speak of postpartum depression, I'm reminded of a family friend of ours who loved me when she had just had a little baby. She didn't want anybody holding the baby except for me. And now that I'm older, I realize she was going through one of those, because she only wanted to hold her baby herself. And I remember her in-laws visiting, and I was there that day. She was only comfortable giving the baby to me. She didn't want anybody touching that baby. And everybody was like, she's acting so weird. And it's almost as if it's a first baby. And I think this was like a second baby. And now that I'm older, it makes more sense to me. I mean, I was just a little girl, but it seemed as though she was more obsessed with leaving the baby with me and the adults in the room. And I didn't mind, because I loved the baby. But now that I'm older, I'm like, she was really going through some like mental breakdown at that point. She wanted nobody close to her child.
Yes. And you see, this is what I'm saying, is that, you know, the evidence in this field and studies in this field is so vast and growing so fast that we have to keep up with it in terms of evidence-based information to know how we can support women.
Yeah.
Because it's not new. You know, it's not that it only started existing 5 years ago or 10 years ago. It was always there. We just weren't aware of it, and we didn't know how to deal with it. So I think, you know, we also sit in a situation where many of our parents have experienced postpartum depression and they didn't even know it. They couldn't give it a name. And when you can't name something, it's always hard to heal from it.
True. Sure. Now, tell me, Tara, if a mom feels overwhelmed and doesn't really know where to start, what's the first step that you would recommend?
Reach out for help. I think that is always the first point of call. And when you are gaslit by somebody who you're reaching out for help to, go to someone else. You know, go to the next person. I think we have to build resilience in terms of reaching out and finding that help and knowing where to go for help. So almost, you know, researching, unfortunately, I don't think there is such a database at the moment that exists where you can find literally all people that's in relation to maternal and child health care on one document. You get what I mean? And we will, you know, in future, we will definitely create such things. But if you had that one resource where you could go and ask for help, you know, and you could get the help that you need. But I think reaching out is the most important thing. Don't sit in your own room and think that it's only you. You know, there's other moms that are going through the same things that you are going through, who are having the same experiences. So when you reach out for help, please don't think that it's stupid, right?
Yeah. Or,
you know, when people say, I'm going to ask you a stupid question, you know, there's no such a thing as a stupid question, because someone in the room wanted to ask that and they were too afraid to ask it or to say it. So I think call for help, reach out for help, and continue until you find the help that fits you.
Yeah.
Because you may kiss a few frogs, right, in this journey. going to a few people that you don't necessarily click with, or that you don't feel like they've understood you.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you find that person, so go and kiss a few frogs and then find your person who's going to help you.
I like that analogy. Tara, thank you. Thank you so much for your time, my sweetheart, and thank you for so much knowledge. You did mention Wellbeings Africa website where we could check stuff as well. How do we head over to there? I think it's wellbeingsafrica.co.za, if I'm not mistaken. .com, right?
Yeah, it's wellbeingsafrica.com.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Tara. Have a lovely day further.
Sikuthanda ngendlela emangalisayo. Khetha iRadio Pulpit 657 AM. Khetha uthando.
Do you need prayer? Radio Pulpit, in collaboration with Need Prayer, is ready to stand in prayer with you. Contact us today with your prayer request at 012-334-1222 or WhatsApp us on 067-429-7564. You can also visit us on radiopulpit.co.za for your online prayer request. We will faithfully pray with you.
It's good for you as our listener to know about Radio Pulpit's activities. Or do you need advice in an area of your life? Then why don't you log on to www.radiopulpit.co.za. Here you can talk to us, listen to us via live audio streaming, and there is also other reading material for the soul. What are you waiting for? Visit the Radio Pulpit website right now. www.radiopulpit.co.za. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion.
Faith, hope, and love on air. Radio Pulpit, 657 AM.
You and 657 AM and life. A winning team on the road to eternity.